Right, well, first off, by the way, I'm Bart and I'm minister here at Emmanuel. First thing I'd like to say is a big thank you to everyone involved in this service, whether that's sort of behind the scenes. There's been a lot of planning going on over the last few months. Whether it's to the Berylands Bells, you were sounding wonderful, and thank you so much for singing and challenging us by singing in German, which was great. So thank you for doing that. To our choir as well, and to everyone involved, thank you so much for all that you have done. I'd like us just to think this evening for a few minutes about how Jesus can be the hope of the world. Because that is a big claim, isn't it? That a man born 2,000 miles away, 2,000 years ago, could be the hope of the whole world. How could that possibly be the case? Well, in order to think about that, I'd like us to look at Isaiah chapter 11 again. Pat just read that for us. Would you turn it up in your orders of service? Because then you can have a look and see where I'm directing you to. So on page 13 of the orders of service, you've got Isaiah 11 printed out for you. Now, Isaiah wrote this hundreds of years before Jesus was born, before the stable and the manger and the Mary and Joseph going on the donkey or camel or, well, it was a donkey, wasn't it? But before all that, hundreds of years before, Isaiah wrote these words. And it's as if Isaiah takes us, as we read this, to a future world. It's like he takes us in the TARDIS, if only he knew what that was. He takes us in the TARDIS and takes us to a future world. And it's a perfect world. And I want you to see what this perfect world looks like in Isaiah 11. Because it's the world we all want. I'm only going to pick out a couple of things. There are many things that you could pick out from it. The first is that it's a world without injustice. You see that in verse 3. If you have a look on your order of service, it says, and he, oh, there's a king in this world. He is the one who brings about justice. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. This is a place of perfect justice. When it says he doesn't judge by what he sees or what he hears, that's not saying he ignores what's going on around him. It's just saying he doesn't have to rely on just what he sees or hears. He knows what's happened. If there's a jury, if you've ever been on a jury, you know, you've got to go by just what you see and what you hear. You've kind of got to guess what actually happened. Not so this king. He knows exactly what happened and therefore can judge justly. And it says the poor and the needy, their needs are met. He judges for them. There is no injustice in this future world. But also, there is perfect peace. And that's where you get this bit, this wonderful description. Verse 6 onwards, you see wolves and lambs and leopards and goats and calves and lions and children and cows and bears and so on, and even snakes are all in together, and they're not killing each other. And that's wonderful. It's a picture of perfect peace. Nothing is out there to get you. It is all perfect peace. And we know from elsewhere in the Bible, in another description of this perfect future world, that there won't be wars. There'll be peace between people. No wars, no people clambering over one another to get ahead in life. Just perfect peace. And therefore, no stress in this future world, no anxiety, and verse 9, no death. It says they will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. There will be no death. What a perfect world that would be. But our problem is we come back in the TARDIS. And we come back to our world. And we come out into our world. And I would think each one of us over this last year would have been only too aware of the fact that we are not in this world, this future world, we're in this present world, and this present world is one which is marked by injustice. Maybe you've had some injustice in your life that you're painfully aware of. Maybe you know those for whom there's been injustice. And we know, don't we, that the poor and the needy, if they don't have someone to fight for them, to shout for them, well, they often get ignored and neglected. And we know in this world that there isn't perfect peace. I mean, you've just got to watch Planet Earth 2 to see that there is not perfect peace. The animals don't get on together, do they? I mean, I don't want to give it away if you haven't seen it, but the last one of Planet Earth 2, you've even got fish eating pigeons. The animals don't get on. And we don't get on. I mean, I don't mean you and me. I mean, we around the world don't get on, do we? There is war. People do trample over one another. And there is stress, and there is anxiety. And there is death. Just this last week, we went to a funeral of a friend of ours, and although in many ways it was very uplifting, yet it was sad. I mean, every funeral is tragically sad, isn't it? And that's the world we're in. So the question is, how do we go from this world that we're in now to the future world? How can that happen? After all, these verses in Isaiah 11, they're a promise from God. They are a promise. God's saying, I'm going to make this happen. But how? And the answer is, well, no prizes for guessing, but the answer is, Jesus is the hope of the world. Okay, but how? How does Jesus get us from this world to that future world? Well, can I tell you what the answer is not, before I tell you what the answer is? The answer is not that Jesus just came 2,000 years ago and said to us, try harder. That's not what happened. Now, actually, lots of people think that that's what Christianity is about. It is about God saying to us, for goodness sake, be good. Stop making a mess of the world. Try harder. But wonderfully, that is not Christianity. No, the answer is not try harder. To see what the answer is, would you have another look at Isaiah chapter 11? The answer is in verse 9. I'm going to read the whole verse, although the answer is in the second half. It says, they will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, just keep your eyes on that verse. I want you to notice the word for halfway through the verse. Now, the word for there, that is telling you and me the basis for this wonderful future world. Do you see that? It's sort of saying, look, all that has gone before, the perfect justice, the perfect peace, that happens because of what follows. And what follows is, the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, in the Bible, when it talks about someone having knowledge of someone, that doesn't mean to say they just know about them. It means that they're in relationship with them, that they know them personally. So what's this saying? It's saying, look, the foundation of this wonderful future world is the knowledge of the Lord, relationship with God. Now, that may surprise you. The Bible is saying, look, the root, the main thing that we desperately need is relationship with God. Mike Kane, who wrote a book called Real Life Jesus, it's a great book, really good little book for introducing people to Jesus, and particularly to John's Gospel. At the beginning of this book, he gives a really helpful illustration, which I find helpful. I hope you do too. And the illustration is this. He says, there was a time when 40 pilot whales were stranded on Darlington Beach in Tasmania. 40 pilot whales. And they're helpless. If they don't get help, they're going to die. And this is what Mike Kane says about those whales. He says, the whale was made for the ocean. The ocean is the environment in which it is free to be a whale, to swim, to leap, to sing, to dive down 1,000 meters into the dark depths and catch squid with its built-in sonar. It is an awesome creature. On the beach, you can still see something of its power and its beauty, but your admiration is mixed with sadness as it thrashes its tail helplessly, as it lies there limp and wheezing. You know that this was not the life it was created for. A beached whale is a dead whale. The Bible teaches that, as the whale was made for the ocean, men and women were made for God. He created us to enjoy his love and to reflect his ways on earth. Our relationship with him is, as it were, the environment in which we are free to be fully human. But as the whale has crashed out of the ocean, humankind has walked out on God. We thought that it would set us free, but it has left us stranded on the beach. You see, Mike Caine is saying that the Bible says that the reason why the world, the current world, is the way it is because we have walked out on God. But Jesus came. Jesus came 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away. He came so that we can know God. Being God, he was born on earth and walked around among us. And if you'd been there, you would have caught a glimpse of this wonderful, future, perfect world. Because as he walked around, he helped the needy. He healed the sick. He raised the dead. But it was only a glimpse. Because although Jesus was going around doing these things, he said he'd come with a particular mission. He'd come to do something particular. He'd come to die. He'd come to die. But if Jesus came so that we could know God, how does him dying help us come to know God? Well, we need to realize that us walking out on God as mankind, us walking out on God, doesn't just strand us on a beach. It puts us in the dock. Because, you see, by walking out on God, we have committed cosmic treason. For rejecting God, for putting ourselves on the throne of the universe, we deserve God saying to us, I'm going to reject you. We deserve God's anger. And so you see, we can't just stroll back into God's presence. We can't just turn up to God and say, God, I'm here. You've been waiting for me. Because our guilt is before us. But this is how Jesus is the hope of the world. He came so that we could know God. And to do that, he died in our place as our substitute, taking the anger that we deserve from God, so that it all landed on him when he died on the cross, so that those who accept Jesus, they can know that we're forgiven and we can come and have a relationship with God. We can know God. And God is changing people, one person at a time. Wasn't it wonderful seeing those cardboard testimonies, people saying what God has been doing in their lives? And each one is because they have accepted Jesus and are now in a relationship with God. They have, as it were, dived back into the ocean. How about you? Jesus came 2,000 years ago as the hope of the world so that we could know God. He will come again to bring that future perfect world and to be there, not to face his anger, but to be in that wonderful world. We need to have accepted Jesus in this life.